When isn't he? I'd swallow Michael Ironside's spooge. God damn it. Michael Ironside's awesome.
Geek Juice Radio.
No one to hear you, baby, just me.
He lives with his mom and his whale penis.
I'm the juggernaut, bitch.
What you would imagine you would hear if you got raped while playing Tetris.
Visit our website at www.geekjuicemedia.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Geek Juice Radio. You've made the right choice. Before we get to tonight's episode, which is our second-to-last installment in our ongoing series, I'd like to talk to you about affordable pornography. If you go to adamandeve.com, which sounds like a biblical website, but it is not, and use the promo code J-U-I-C-E, that spells juice, here's what you get. 50% off a single item. You get free shipping within Canada's Mexico. You get 3 bonus DVDs. They could be coasters, if you want to think of them like that. If you got some really nice tables, then they're coasters. And you will also get a bonus mystery gift, which is intriguing and scary. So off you go, but before you get knee-deep in porn, let's listen to tonight's episode. My name is Charlie McMullen. Joining us tonight is Alex Jowski.
Hello.
Kevin Daly.
I'm here.
Josh Hadley.
Mumble, mumble, grumble, gripe.
Tonight, we will be speaking to each other about the 4
You gonna introduce Cecil or not?
I was leading to that, you sons of bitches. It's called showmanship because it's Cecil's. Fuck it, Cecil Trachtenberg. How you doing?
I'm just peachy,
and just as I was until just a moment ago. What I was getting to is that tonight we will be talking about Cecil's movies. So you go ahead and kick us off, buddy.
All right. Well, the first movie I was going to talk about is the movie called Lockout. Lockout came out just last year, almost universally was just bashed. People were bad-mouthing it, saying how terrible it was, saying just unwatchable, and kind of came and went in the theaters, didn't do really well. I know a lot of people, too, were mad because originally filmed as an R-rated film, and then it suffered the dreadful, you know, cut down to PG-13, so, you know, they could attempt to reach a larger audience. When I saw it the first time, I actually kind of stumbled upon it. One night I was sitting around and I saw that it just popped up on Netflix Instant. And I was like, you know, I'll check it out. It's got Guy Pearce in it. And, you know, why not? It looks kind of cool. Watched it. Thought it was fantastic. Thought it was a really cool action film. Thought Snow, who was played by Guy Pearce, one of the coolest new characters I've seen in the longest time. The whole movie had a New York Escape from New York in space kind of vibe. The only problem I had with it, and this wasn't the fault of the film, early on, if anybody who's seen the film knows that there was that really awful car chase, that the special effects in that were just dreadful. They were filming that and they had their budget cut, and unfortunately they couldn't finish the effect, but the scene they couldn't remove because it was essential to the plot. So they left it in there. And, you know, I mean, it's only a short segment. So unfortunately, it happens so early that it really does kind of put a distaste in some people's mouths. Rest of the movie, especially like once he gets on the space station, I thought it was excellent. I thought it was cool because the main villain was not really the villain. It just felt like the beginning of a new franchise. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's one of those ones where I was baffled how much people disliked it.
And see, I thought it was the end of an old franchise, Cecil, because back in mid-90s, John Carpenter was trying to get money for Escape from Earth, where Snake Plissken is forced to go and rescue the president's daughter on a space station. You cannot tell me that this was not originally the script from Escape from Earth.
They were going to go with the president's daughter again?
Yes, they were. Because it was because this one, it was just like Escape from L.A., where it was almost a parody of the previous films. So you cannot tell me, Cecil, that this was not originally Escape from Earth. That said, I enjoyed the hell out of the movie.
Yes, I really enjoyed it, too. The only problem I had with it is a lot of the action sequences are over-edited. It's hard to see what's going on. It's just too many cut.
I did eventually, I got it again on Blu-ray, I got the Blu-ray for $4 used, which was awesome. It did seem to... I'd have to kind of go back and watch the PG-13 version and watch the Blu-ray version to really see what the differences were. But the Blu-ray version, at least to me, it was the unrated cut, and it did seem to be a bit more graphic, and the action scenes didn't seem to be as choppy, probably because they were able to put those extra few seconds in there of, you know, blood splatter and whatnot.
That could be the PG-13 version I watched.
I watched the unrated, so I didn't see the PG-13 edits.
But it did have a great escape from blank vibe.
But come on, can you tell me that Snow is clearly not Snake Plissken?
I found Snow a lot more smartassy than Snake Plissken. Snake didn't talk a whole lot.
Snake is kind of stoic.
Yeah, he saved his words. Snow, he's just, that first scene where he's being interrogated, and he's just got a line for everything.
So it would have been like a very chatty Snake Plissken?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they made changes to it.
He felt more like Ash from Evil Dead.
Exactly. Ash was pretty chatty and right there with the one-liners. Same thing here with Snow.
This movie is okay. It took itself way more seriously than I thought it was going to. It looked like it was going to be fun, and Guy Pearce seems like he's having fun, and the villains think they're in a completely different movie, and the girl is also thinks she's in a different movie. So I liked it. It was all right. I didn't think it was awful, but I also don't think I'd watch again. I definitely didn't like it as much as I liked from the Escape from movies. And though I wouldn't mind seeing Guy Pearce play that character again because he was amusing.
That's not going to happen though. Due to this, like Cecil pointed out, this film bombed. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I didn't love it. It was okay. It's going to be a theme for at the night for me because mostly my opinion of these movies were it was okay. I don't have the passionate hatred or like for any of these that I had for some of Josh's, for example.
Hey, why do you think this film tanked as badly as it did? I think part of it was the PG-13ing.
Sometimes it's hard to tell. Like, there are movies that look like they're going to be just box office smashes. You know, the internet might have a flurry over it, and then when it finally gets released, Snakes on a Plane, it doesn't live up to expectations box office wise. Now, just a quick mention, I love Snakes on a Plane, but that's a whole other thing. Lockout, I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of people didn't go see it because of the PG-13 rating, but as we all know, the people that we know and the people that we talk to on a regular basis are not indicative of the usual movie-going public. A movie that we might be hearing really bad things about and we have zero interest in might go off to become a massive success, and then vice versa. The movie that we're all dying to go see just flounders at the box office. So, I mean, it could have... I don't remember what it came out against, but more than likely, whatever it was released against just trounced it. And that's probably one of the major reasons why it just didn't do well.
I think part of the reason would be, again, with the PG-13, it came out right after Priest and two or three other movies that were clearly shot to be R and edited for PG-13. You remember that quick trend they had at the end of 2012? To the point where I think people were going, no, I'm not doing this just out of principle.
Yeah, I mean, that was infuriating me because the simple fact is the studios they're constantly looking at ways to just rob people. So what they're doing, and I think we talked about this before, release the PG-13 cut in theaters, and then they would release the unrated version on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever, and then be like, you know, see the version you couldn't see. The thing that was frustrating was because a lot of people had already formulated their opinion on the theatrical cut. And then you go and you see the uncut version, which is the real cut of the film. And a lot of times it is a much better film. Sometimes those little moments of gore and the maybe language or whatnot or things that were cut added additional layers to the film. And in the case of a movie like Stay Alive, there was some really gory stuff that they couldn't put in the film. So they wanted it to go PG-13. So they cut out an entire like story arc. So there was an entire subplot and everything. That
wasn't there
really
a whole character missing in that?
Yeah. Yeah. They removed an entire character from the film. And then people went to see it in theaters and are like, this movie doesn't make any sense. It's stupid. And then you see the full version and you're like, oh, this is why this is this way, because they removed an entire character. You know, so, and that is just such a slap in the face to the audience, because it's almost like, hey, you know what? We're going to give you this and you'll like it regardless of whether or not it's the complete thing or not. You'll just watch it again on DVD and buy it. It's frustrating.
That's almost as bad as removing an entire actor's filmography from a review.
Yeah, it is.
Cabin in the Woods and Three Stooges came out opposite of Lockout April 13th, 2012.
Wow.
Yeah.
It didn't have a lot of strong competition, because if I remember, Cabin in the Woods didn't do all that great theatrically either.
I think Three Stooges did, though.
That's a sad statement, Kevin. Why are you so negative?
I don't know. You're rubbing off on me, Hadley. I did want to say one thing about the PG-13. There was a movie, King Arthur, you guys probably remember it. Awful theatrical cut, PG-13 theatrical cut. It's actually watchable on the unrated DVD. It actually makes sense, and I can follow the fight scenes because the gore and the violence and the decapitations are put back in. Okay, it's not great. It's watchable in the unrated version. It's not watchable in the theatrical version.
I didn't actually see Lockout. I remember when we did that for Trailer Park, and I remember thinking, it doesn't look like a fantastic movie, but there's an indefinable quality that I liked about it. And I will say that Guy Pearce is one of the most underrated actors working today. I think that guy is awesome.
Except when he's playing an old man for no reason. Prometheus!
Yeah, that's true. There wasn't a reason, per se, for him being an old man. But
could anybody tell it was Guy Pearce? I couldn't.
I didn't at first either, no.
I didn't either.
But he's an awesome actor. I mean, he was the good part of Iron Man 3 for me.
I always see him as Edmund Exley.
Right. L.A. Confidential. He was awesome in that. He was really awesome in Memento. That's still in my top 10 of all time. So I don't know. Like a lot of really good movies tank at the box office. I mean, The Big Lebowski tanked at the box office. Office Space tanked at the box office. It's just sometimes a movie comes along that an audience isn't really ready for, and the studio just kind of dumps it rather than hatch a usable marketing plan.
All right. The next one is Jason X. Now, this was one where, if you're not already a fan of the Friday the 13th series, I can understand you not liking it. But then it would be a point of, why did you go see it in the first place? This clearly wasn't a movie that was directed for you. It was total fan service. It was just so ridiculous. I mean, the concept of taking Jason Voorhees and putting him in outer space is just about the furthest thing that they could do from the series roots. I thought that the deaths were great. They were very creative. They had a great sense of humor. The callbacks to the old Friday the 13th were awesome, like the sleeping bag where he's killing he's taking the two girls and he's smashing them against the
simulation.
The simulation, since they're a hologram, they're not dying and he's confused. Fantastic. I thought the look of Cyber Jason was awesome. The visuals were really impressive for this type of movie. They could have gone super cheap and made it look chintzy, but I thought they actually looked pretty slick. As a one-off, it was great. I am glad that they didn't decide to kind of keep going in that vein. I don't think it would have worked but just as like a one-shot, it was cool. And it was light years beyond the god-awful remake that we're now stuck with. And it's one, again, like I said, if the general public didn't like it, that's fine. But I mean, if you're a Friday the 13th fan, I can't see what's not to like.
Are you talking about the Ronnie Yu remake?
No.
Platinum Dunes.
The Platinum Dunes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that Ronnie, was bad.
Yeah, Ronnie Yu did
Freddy versus Jason. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was awful. But Cecil, they did continue the story in the comic books.
They did.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but not. It wasn't another movie. It was, you know, going in the comics, I think, is fine. But if they would have kept going with the series in this direction, I don't think it would have particularly worked.
Well, the comics also have Jason X being a different Jason. And they have, like, Jason Voorhees versus Jason X in one comic.
Yeah, I don't know how the hell they could pull that.
That was a time rift thing. It was still the same. It was still Jason Voorhees. It was just the old, like, primordial Jason versus the cyber Jason.
Because, see, I loved Jason X. I thought Jason X was a fantastic film, and I saw it 2 years before it came out, because I don't know if you got the bootleg as well, Cecil. I got a bootleg of this almost 2 full years before it was released, because this is right when New Line was having all those financial problems, and I was a big supporter of it. When it was funny how, you know, a year and a half later, I start seeing trailers and I'm like, I've already seen this movie.
I'm particularly interested to hear what Kevin has to say about it, since the only other Friday the 13th movie he's seen was the first one.
I've seen Freddy vs. Jason, which I liked, but mostly because I thought it was funny. I like this one okay. It's pretty good, actually. I think it's my favorite of the four that I watched for this week. I think it didn't go far enough with the humor. I thought it tried to be a more often than it should have, tried to be more serious, the slasher stuff. And it should have just been more goofy, because there's so many things tonally about the movie that are obviously humorous. Like the chick saying, "This sucks in so many ways," before she gets sucked through the airlock thing and or through that hole in the wall. And
that is Oscar Wilde-like wordplay, man.
Some of that, though, Kevin, is due to studio interference. If you listen to the commentary track, writer Todd Farmer brings up numerous times, this scene was supposed to be much more humorous. This scene was supposed to have this slant to it. And the producers kept, no, we're making a goddamn slasher film. We're not making a comedy.
Well, I wish the studio hadn't interfered then, because I would have probably liked it quite a bit. I liked, by the end of the movie, I liked a lot. I liked the hologram and the we love premarital sex. I love that scene. I felt like I was waiting an hour and 20 minutes for that scene.
And it was worth it.
Oh, yeah. And then
but
the,
like
other sergeant coming out of nowhere to grab
Brodsky. Yeah. But
see, I mean, like, there's so many great things at the end of the movie. The kung fu android is funny. But a lot of the middle portion of the movie is very like, it reminded me of Alien. They're on a spaceship, and these Marines are getting picked off one by one. But it's a fun movie. It's pretty good. I just wish it hadn't been. I guess I wish there wasn't studio interference, so it'd have been more goofy, because that was what I liked best about it.
There's a really funny story about studio interference in this. Remember the initial fight between KM14 and Jason, where he's before he's Uber Jason, and she kicks the living shit out of him? Yeah, that was originally supposed to be in zero gravity. And they shot that because you always shoot fight scenes later. That way, in case an actor gets hurt, you don't have to try and explain why they have a black eye all of a sudden. So that was one of the last things they shot, and they were running out of money. It was supposed to be in zero gravity, and they're like, I don't know how we're going to do this. The producer walks up, takes a pen, crosses zero gravity out of the script, and he goes, there, now you fit back in your budget. So that's the kind of studio indifference. We don't care how it works for the film. Stay fucking in budget.
I do like that it was specifically designed to be placed outside of continuity, because it didn't know what was going to happen with Freddy versus Jason. So they just like, we're going to set this after all current continuity, both because the setup takes place in 2010. And even that's outside of the Freddy versus Jason continuity. And then they jump forward 450 more years. So they just want to like, we want this to have as little to do with the current continuity as we can, so we can cram other stuff in there. And I'm like, I appreciate that. That means I can watch this film without having to really have seen the other ones.
I think they're all kind of like that, though.
I liked it because it was clearly made by people that were fans of Friday the 13th, so it had a lot of nods to all the stuff that made the Friday the 13th film so enjoyable for the people that enjoy them. Specifically, as you mentioned, the hologram scene, though. We love premarital sex.
And smoking drugs, or like whatever that line was.
No.
Smoking pot.
Yeah.
The line goes, do you want to smoke pot and have some premarital sex?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my favorite scene as well. I really liked Jason X, because I think the Friday the 13th movies, I really like them. Like, I am a fan of the franchise, but people don't like them because they're, like, very well-made cinematic gems. I mean, it's just entertaining to watch. I mean, because you're not really rooting for the people that Jason kills. You're kind of rooting for Jason after a while. And
that was probably my biggest issue. I couldn't remember half the characters' names. I guess exactly. It didn't really matter.
Well, especially in Jason X, I think there were too many characters on that ship. I mean, it made sense that you needed so many, but I think it was a lot to keep track of when that wasn't really the point of the movie, as I saw it. Like the hot chick android, entertaining, I guess, but not ultimately unnecessary.
I do like the scene where she's got like the nipples on. How do you like these? And they fall off.
Yeah.
There's something kind of funny about KM14 and Rowan. Lisa Ryder, who plays KM14, was a human character on Andromeda. And the actress that plays Rowan was the artificial intelligence on Andromeda. And they both got cast in this movie without knowing the other one was trying out for the part, where they swapped roles of the who was human and who was AI.
That is a bitch of a typecast.
That is a hell of a nerd reference there, Hadley.
It plus is. That was impressive.
Plus 10 geek cred to you.
Yeah. I thought Jason X was good, though. I liked it.
And it kind of set up a sequel, sort of, with the mask landing on Earth 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Favorite line of the movie, though, was, "It's okay, he just wanted his machete back."
Yeah, that guy deserved
I love that line.
Stabbed all sorts of ways.
But I hated that one girl that tries to escape with the shuttlecraft. That just, like, panics and locks herself in.
That's a classic horror movie archetype, though. The one that freaks out and tries to get away and she
dies. Yeah, if it wasn't a shuttlecraft, it would have been a laundry room or something.
All right, what do we got next? Terminator Salvation. This is another one that, unfortunately, suffered from being cut to PG-13, much against the director's wishes. He even came out when they were doing the promotional tours. I think he was at Comic-Con or something, when they were like, you know, is this movie going to be PG-13? There's a scene where Moon Bloodgood is taking her top off, standing out in the rain. You know, does that sound like PG-13 to you? And the crowd, and then, of course,
I bet they sounded just like that.
Yeah, they're, you know, they were apparently all Walking Dead fans. And
they all had their dicks in their hands.
I would also like to point out Moon Bloodgood as one of the best real-life names ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, she has the awesome name and then just the hotness to kind of go along with it.
See, she, I thought she'd that be the was whole package. She'd be the whole package if she had any acting ability whatsoever, though.
I thought that was a fake name, considering the open credits sticker in between Common and Jada Grace.
Followed up by Mick G.
Yes, Mick G directing.
Yeah, lots of phony names. It's odd that the one name is actually the real name that sounds like the phony name.
I really like you. I think you're a really great guy, so I'm...
This is going someplace very dark.
See, it is. Hallie didn't even give me this before ripping me a new asshole about the movies I like, so he must really like you, Cece.
I think you are the biggest idiot in the world to be defending this fucking film. This is one of the worst, most sorry excuses of a film I've ever seen in my entire life.
What, are you saying Terminator 3 was better then? Because this is way better than Terminator 3.
I will say it.
Here comes the Hadley fanboy nitpicking. 3, 2, 1.
Terminator 3 was a better film. Greater technology than they do in the future. They've got big transformer robots and self-riding motorcycles that are somehow built that a human can ride for no reason whatsoever. Skynet's plan to get Sam, I can't act my way out of anything, Worthington, into next to John Connor is the dumbest plan ever because it requires every single thing going right and so much coincidence that, hey, if we plant this thing inside this guy and make him a sleeper agent, maybe at some point he'll get close to our big enemy and we can trigger him, and then he'll trick our enemy into trying to break into our headquarters where we can reveal the Arnold Schwarzenegger fanboy Terminator at him. Do you see how fucking stupid this movie is?
It's like, how come the professor can make a radio out of coconuts but he can't fix the boat, right?
Yeah, what about Scarecrow's brain?
So, Cecil, explain to me why this movie isn't the most insulting thing this Terminator franchise has ever done. And yes, Jowski, it's fucking worse than Terminator 3.
Hey, Michael Ironside is great.
Michael Ironside's always great.
When isn't he? I'd swallow Michael Ironside's spooge. God damn it, Michael Ironside's awesome.
I think no matter what I say, like, it's not going to alter your opinion. And, I mean, that's fine. I don't care. I mean, it doesn't alter my opinion of it. I like it. And I think it's one of those movies where some movies I do get impassioned about, and I see where you're coming from, where you just get that enraging, like, this is wrong. This isn't supposed to be like this. It's supposed to
be
like this.
It's insulting. Not just wrong. It's that Mick G is, I don't care. I'm just making this. I don't care.
I kind of took it as... they were expanding on things. I mean, if you read the Dark Horse comics, they did a lot of really cool, outlandish stuff with the license. And I mean, they went, you know, they had RoboCop versus Terminator, which was fantastic.
The Sega game was amazing, by the way.
Sega game was so awesome. It was one of the bloodiest games, I think, still. I mean, people just erupt in geysers of blood. It's fantastic.
And that's even when you don't have the gore code put in. If you put in the gore code, it's even worse.
Yeah, it's crazy. I still have that around here somewhere. I mean, Sam Worthington, I agree. He's one of those guys that all of a sudden, kind of like Channing Tatum, he came out of nowhere and all of a sudden he's supposed to be a leading man in everything. And his acting ability is not really the best. Although I do like Sam Worthington more than I like Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum, I can't stand. Sam Worthington didn't particularly bother me in this. And I know you didn't like the Arnold cameo. I thought the Arnold cameo was awesome.
That was the definition of fan service.
It absolutely was, and I loved it. I thought it was terrific. It was so, like, they had... Wait.
So Hadley is complaining about fanboy nitpicks, and then he doesn't like the fan service. Why are his friends...
Yeah. He's a complex man, Kevin.
Apparently. Yeah.
And then
he's
the original...
complicated man.
And as bad as the ending is, the ending was almost worse. Do you guys know how bad McGee's proposed ending to this movie was? I'm sure you do, Cecil.
I believe so. Didn't he had? I'm trying to remember. All right, maybe I don't. What did he do? What did he plan on doing?
John Connor gets killed. So Sam
actually,
Worthington.
Actually, I was kind of hoping that would end.
Hold on.
That
no, way. it's gonna get dumber. John Connor gets killed. And because they're in the Terminator factory where they can do whatever they want, they put his face into it, manufacture a fake John Connor face, put it on Sam Worthington, who is almost completely reverted to a Terminator at this point, who they reprogram to be the John Connor we see in Terminator 2 because, and I quote from the original script, the legend of John Connor is more powerful than the man ever could be. And I just went, that is so stupid.
Well, that's not what happened, so it's fine.
No, but that shows kind of,
it's,
the
it's
that
ballsy.
Shows the level
I love that.
Of, I don't
thank
give
you, Josh
a fuck
Hadley, that's
that
not
McG.
What happened.
That shows the level of I don't give a fuck McG had going into this.
McGeehot.
We're talking the guy that did the two Charlie's Angels films.
Yeah, and up until about 15 minutes ago, I was confusing this with Rise of the Machines. So I actually haven't seen this. I had all kinds of negative stuff to go off on, but it's not Rise of the Machines. So
oh, Rise of the Machines is terrible.
It sure is. But let's not waste time with that. I've not seen Terminator Salvation. And thanks to this, I never will.
What I liked about Terminator Salvation is it kind of just threw Rise of the Machines out of continuity, thankfully.
No, it didn't. It's a direct sequel. Christian Bale.
Yeah,
was...
but it...
Well, and even the pregnant woman, his wife, is Claire Danes character from Rise of the Machines, you dink.
Yeah, and that kind of threw me off.
It's a direct sequel, so it didn't knock it out of continuity at all.
But she was still pregnant, but this is like years after.
She wasn't pregnant in Rise of the Machines.
Yeah, well, you know, that they got pregnant pretty fast.
And it's wow. Like, why don't they the whole plane out of the stuff they make the black box out of?
Yeah, after a week in that bunker, they'd have been like, let's make a baby.
you see what you did, Cecil?
Close your eyes. Close your eyes, Justin.
Yeah, you've been
it's okay.
Warning
it's
me that this
okay.
Was coming.
We're going to smother you, and it's going to be all right, Justin.
I liked the callbacks to the original ones with the lines of,
fan
I'll be
service.
Back. And yeah, it was good fan service. I appreciated it. I liked when Kyle
It was
Kyle
not
Reese...
good fan service. Them playing Guns N' Roses was not fan service.
That was excellent
was
fan
insulting.
Service when it starts playing the Guns N' Roses. That was great. I loved that moment.
I think Josh's brain just shit.
Age. Josh Hadley has become Jeremy Irons in Dungeons and Dragons in this episode.
I like the fact that it actually conveyed that theme of salvation without ever outright saying salvation.
Oh, you mean between all the plot stupidity and the insult?
I liked having the broader look at Skynet that we never really got in other parts
Helena
of the franchise.
Bonham Carter?
Well, not her. I was talking about, like, oh, this is a T-600, this is a T-800, seeing, like, how Skynet evolved but still keeps the older stuff around.
Okay, so let me get my point in, because it's not nearly as ragey as everybody else. Again, movie was okay. It was my least favorite of the four. I found it to be kind of dull and slow throughout the whole thing. I hate the color palette, because it's just 50 shades of brown. I had no problem with Sam Worthington's performance. I actually think Marcus is my favorite character in the entire series. Christian Bale does nothing with the John Connor character. He's normally, I find him to be a pretty good actor. I found him kind of pointless here. Some of the side characters were fine. The story itself was kind of interesting, kind of a side story that kind of ties everything together sort of way, because it's mostly about Marcus. It was okay. I liked the effects fine. I didn't think they were, it was too intrusive. I mean, it was 2 hours of my day. I didn't think I wasted them, but I felt that the movie could have been a little more. Oh, my biggest issue with the movie, the last fight scene's about 17 minutes long. I stopped watching because I already knew it was going to happen as far as like, I mean, the Terminator was going to get beat one way or another. I didn't need to watch some brawl for 17 minutes. After Marcus takes the chip out of his head, the fight should have been over within about 2 to 3 minutes of that, and it takes about another 15 from there. So, overdrawn and kind of pointless ending. The fight scene, anyway.
A lot of running time padding?
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me. It was all right. I don't have the fanboy rage that Hadley has, and sorry, I don't have the love for it that Cecil does.
So, meh.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, before we give Josh an aneurysm, we should probably move on.
That's probably for the best. Yeah, that was the one that I knew that was coming. All right, so the last one I have is Shark Knight 3D. The movie reminded me a lot of Anaconda, only with sharks, which Anaconda was also PG-13. Now, this is a movie, unlike the other ones, where they were originally filmed R and then dialed back to be PG-13. This one was always intended to be PG-13. And they actually, I thought, kind of pushed it about as far as they could. They had a lot more blood in there, and it was cool. I thought that the story was good. A lot of people were equating it to Asylum Pictures, and as much as I do enjoy the occasional Asylum movie, those ones are incredibly basic. I thought that this kind of had some neat little twists in there. Donnell Logue, who is always great. Sarah Paxton in a bikini the whole movie was fantastic. This is one of those ones where the 3D didn't hurt the film. Like, there's some movies where you're watching the 2D version, and every now and then something is sticking out at the screen and you're like, oh, here's the 3D part. Whereas this, there were 3D elements in there, but it didn't detract from the movie when you were seeing it in 2D. It never took you out of the picture. Whereas there was a movie that came out, I think it was last year, Bait, and that was Bait 3D. And that one, I did enjoy it, but there were so many moments where all of a sudden, there's this sticking in your face, and it really got old after a while. And this, thankfully, didn't
suffer from that. That's what she said.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba. David Arliss directed, who I'm really bummed that died, because I enjoyed his movies, and I really would have liked to have seen more from him. I've had people arguing about reasonings behind why they didn't like the film. It's fine, but one of the most ridiculous things was I had a guy that was arguing he didn't like the movie because it was racist. He said that I was like, well, what's an example of the movie being racist? And they're like, well, the black guy in the movie, at one point he was fighting the shark with a spear. And I was like, oh, now you're just grasping at straws. Come on, seriously?
Like, I'm not gonna lie, Cecil. I briefly thought about that for a moment, and then like, no, that's not intentional, but it was a little bit of a red flag.
I think that was because that character was a football player, right? Implying he has a strong arm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and precisely one arm at that point in the movie.
Yeah, and he
was a javelin player. Okay.
Do you actually play javelins, or?
I don't know if that's the term or not. A javeliner, I'll say.
A javelineer.
A javelauncher.
It wasn't enough to make me think the movie was racist, but I did notice that.
All right, but it didn't, like, it wasn't some red, it wasn't some red flag that completely was like, this whole movie is racist.
No, of course not. The villains are racist.
No, what do you think the villains? Hadley?
Yeah, they were the hillbillies, but the thing was, they weren't, well, with the exception of there were the two guys, there was the one ex-boyfriend, and then the other guy who, if I'm not mistaken, the one guy was Josh Leonard from the original Blair Witch Project, which I thought was kind of cool to see him pop up. the final shot of the movie was corny with the shark popping out of the water, but the one scene where they were out running the shark on the Wave Runner and it jumped up and got, I thought that was awesome. Like, that was like the money shot for me. And
in Soviet Russia, the shark jumps you.
Soviet Russia.
That scene actually surprised me. I was not expecting that. I literally went OS and I didn't say S.
Even though, I mean, this was one of those movies that I don't always gauge IMDb on ratings because they're often all over the place. But this is one they gave it. I mean, right now it's sitting at a 3.9. And meanwhile, House at the End of the Street is at 5.4. Now, granted, a 5.4 is still not great. But House at the End of the Street was borderline unwatchable. It was a horrendous movie. This at least was entertaining.
The worst marketing in the history of movies, as far as I'm concerned, with House in the Street. Hashtag hates. Go F yourself.
Yeah, I remember that. That's just dumb.
Thing terrible.
I liked about Shark Night. I would have loved to see an R version of it. I don't like the PG-13 of it.
The only thing that would have made it more R, though, is if it had nudity. I mean, it was pretty damn violent.
I wanted to see them nude.
Of course you wanted to see Catherine be nude.
But
big American Idol fan that you are.
One thing that does make it unique is this is probably one of the most overproduced shark films I've seen, is that these CGI sharks, they look perfect. Shark Night has the prettiest sharks I've ever seen in a shark movie.
You see, I didn't like this movie. This is, like, Cecil, I don't understand your love for this one. I thought the CGI was terrible. And keep in mind, I saw it in 2D, so I don't know if the 3D was any good or not, because I didn't see this till video. I thought the story was incredibly stupid. The characters all acted stupid. The motivation, like you even pointed out in your good bad review, the motivation for Donald Logue is one of the dumbest things ever.
I thought it was unique. It was like, all right, that's he's videotaping this and selling it to people. All right, I haven't seen that before.
You know why? Because it's dumb.
I didn't necessarily say that it was brilliant, but it was nice to see something different. When I'm watching a movie called Shark Night 3D, I'm going in to see hot girls in bikinis, some good like blood and guts action, and a cool story. And I think I got those. I wasn't looking into it to be Saving Private Ryan.
I kind of like this movie. Again, I don't know. It's kind of growing on me because I was expecting it to be way more goofy than it was. This movie plays it pretty straight. This is a slasher movie, truthfully. And it has the character, the archetypes, your standard archetype kind of characters. And I like that it combines like shark movie with like crazy hillbilly movie. And it kind of works. It works. And what Jowski was complaining about it being overproduced, the cinematography in this movie is way better than it has any right to be. It's got this like weird, I don't even know how to describe it, a lot of fast motion kind of stuff, especially in the beginning parts of the movie that feel almost out of place. Like, the director didn't want to make a shark slasher movie. They wanted to make, like, a coming-of-age, like, arty indie film. Bizarre movie in a lot of senses.
Yeah, like I said, it's one of the prettiest shark movies around.
It is pretty. It's well shot. The colors are vibrant, and I never really was wondering what was going on. It's for a PG-13 horror film, which is what essentially it is. It gets away with a lot. It cuts language and nudity to ante up on the violence to get that PG-13, and it kind of works for that. I didn't find any of the girls attractive enough to the point where I really needed to see them topless, so I was cool with that, and I kind of liked it. I don't know. It's growing on me. I think I'm liking it more and more the more I think about it. It did make me uncomfortable a couple of times. Those hillbillies were pretty creepy. But the villain, the main guy, the boyfriend, the ex-boyfriend, looks like Nikolaj Coster-Waldau from Game of Thrones to me. I just couldn't get over it the entire movie. Nobody knows who I'm talking about. Okay, gotcha.
I know who you're talking about. You're talking about Lannister.
Yes, it's Jaime Lannister, right. Why is that an archetype face for a villain, by the way? And what was that movie we were watching, Dulce Called Elisa, Jowski, where...
Yeah, we kept calling the villain like that guy.
Yeah, it's like that's a face type that just shows up as a villain over and over again.
Well, I mean, you know, to be fair, whoever sees Danny Trejo as the good guy, as soon as you see him, you go, he's the villain.
And he doesn't always play the villain, though.
Yeah.
I know, but you always see him. Like,
what about Spy Kids?
you can easily see. Well, he plays Machete in that, so it's still the same Machete character.
Same character.
Technically.
Badass. He's a good guy and badass.
I haven't seen Badass, so.
He plays a villain in Triple X for like a minute. He's like a drug dealer.
Yeah, he got to, a really skinny him got to get beat up by Steven Seagal and marked for death.
He plays one of the gangsters in Blood In, Blood Out.
So, Cecil, since we still got time, you want to throw some honorable mentions into the mix?
Let's see. A lot of the honorable mentions were ones that were ones that other people had taken or we had discussed, like, you know, The Adventures of Fort Fairlane, which is beloved. I just think that movie's fantastic. Let me think. The original Silent Hill, which came out in 2006.
I love that movie.
Yeah, Jess and I both are very
amazing. Do you have the French Blu-ray?
No, I don't have the French Blu-ray.
Sorry.
You can order it. You can get it from Amazon. I think I paid $20 for it, even after shipping. It is amazing. They have basically it's frustrating because this is all the stuff that should be on the American Blu-ray but isn't. There's two commentaries. The picture is absolutely stunning because it's already a beautiful film, but it looks even more amazing. But like I said, there's two commentaries. There is a 90-minute documentary. There is just tons and tons and tons of additional features. And, you know, and since Blu-rays are not region specific, it'll play. So totally, totally worth getting.
Yeah. I loved Silent Hill was because at the time I didn't know it was based on a video game. I went into I didn't know. It wasn't until after the movie that people were like, "Oh, the video game's better." I'm like,
"I knew, but I never played the game beyond the first 20 minutes of the first one, so I didn't care. I just thought it was an interesting looking and pretty film for a pretty violent horror film."
So I went into Silent Hill expecting a horror movie, and that's what I got. That Silent Hill sequel, on the other hand, that thing's terrible. That Silent Hill Revelation can go fuck itself.
I saw the sequel. I thought the sequel was okay. I thought they did a good job for considering they had less than half the budget of the original. But it had its good moments and bad moments. But it wasn't. It was clearly aimed at a more mainstream audience, whereas the first movie was really just a good movie. Like they weren't trying to appeal to any particular demographic. They were just making a solid movie, and that's most of the time what happens when you're trying to make a movie that appeals to too many people. You end up just appealing to nobody. I did a very serious review of Silent Hill where I was talking about the differences between the video game and the movie and showing how much work went into recreating a lot of moments from the game inside of the movie. And it was awesome. I think that's just a brilliant film. It's one of my all-time favorites. That's a bunch of crap movies that I know are bad, but I still like.
Movies that you won't even defend?
Well, movies that I'll defend on my show, but like I can understand. Like Ticks, for example. Like Ticks is an awesome movie with Clint Howard and Amy Dolence. But like I recognize, all right, that if somebody doesn't like that, well, that's because they don't like, you know, goopy old, you know, horror films.
Spoon!
Spoon! Yeah, oh, the Difference Tick. Actually. No, not The Tick. Not in the face! Not in the face!
You're talking about the horror film Ticks from like 93?
Yeah, with a very young, God, what's his name? Seth Green. Seth Green, I think, was like 15 or something at the time. And it's something like that.
He's got to be older than that because he played a 10-year-old in a 1985 Twilight Zone episode.
Was that the one with the Jamaican nanny?
No, the one you're thinking of is an Amazing Stories.
Amazing Stories, that's right.
The Twilight Zone one is Monster in My Room, I think.
Seth Green is much older than you think. He was born in 74.
Oh, so wow. It makes him a year older than me.
Yeah.
You never guess looking at him, right? Compare Hadley to Seth Green.
Wow. I guess that's because he's such a little fella. That Seth Green, not Hadley. So, but yeah, that he just looks young. It is. It's the gray in the beard throws you off.
It adds distinction, fuckos.
Seth Green hits...
I already told you I thought your beard is awesome. I told you that.
I wonder if Seth Green's fan base knows how Jewish he really is.
But Seth Green turns 40 next.
I still remember him in Airborne.
Yeah.
I do enjoy that movie. It's so
For
ridiculous.
A second when you said that, I thought of Air Bud.
Oh, God. No.
Jowski's a big fan.
No, I watched.
Nope, don't lie. You love all those talking animal movies.
I hate them.
You've got a daughter. You know you've watched them.
I've watched them. Yes.
Doesn't mean he likes them.
Oh no, it means he likes them.
I've argued with her to try and get her to hate them, but
you actually
talking cat best movie
girl.
All time, right, Jowski?
A talking cat.
Because she was watching Homeward Bound 2 from the director of Shark Night, by the way.
Yes. I was looking through his filmography. I'm like, one of these things does not belong here. I think it might be Homeward Bound 2, which I like, by the way. So you can all eat my ass and, you know, slip
Cecil, I got a question about Shark Night. Did Morgan and Wong have anything to do with this? Because I remember reading when this was first announced back when it was called, like, Untitled Shark Movie or something. That was the title. That Morgan and Wong were behind it, and I always loved their X-Files and Millennium stuff, and you know what? I'll be defending one of Jowski's movies. I think The One is a fantastic film.
And yeah, I'll defend Willard.
I'll be on that.
I will not defend Willard.
I will.
That one
that was Morgan and Wong, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. But then they also did Dragon Ball Evolution, so take that for what you will.
So we're talking the Willard remake, right?
Yeah, Crispin Glover?
I love the original.
And R. Lee Ermey? How do you know? Yeah, that's a good movie.
If we're going to go Willard, I love the fact that most people don't know that Michael Jackson's song Ben is about Bruce Davidson singing to a rat in the sequel to Willard, that nobody even knew that there was a sequel to that damn movie.
My dad showed me Willard and Ben back to back, and we're watching Ben and the song's playing the whole movie. I'm like, oh, this is a stupid, terrible, awful song. This is awful. It ruins the whole movie. My dad's like, that's Michael Jackson.
The DVD has a whole music video of Crispin Glover singing that song. That is art.
Okay, I want to see that. I want to see
Crispin. Awesome. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of Geek Juice Radio. I, myself, have learned a lot about that Terminator Salvation is not Rise of the Machines. And I'm sure that you have learned some other things as well. Join us next week for our final installment of this series when Alex Jowski will be talking about his four movies that he thinks deserve some defense. And I get the feeling we're all going to disagree with just about all of these.
So I've already said The One is a good movie.
Hint, he's a big From Justin to Kelly fan.
Not going to want to miss that.
Baby so Genius is two, man. Best movie ever.
Crossroads.
The Hills.
Glitter. He's a big Glitter guy.
Oh, The Hills.
Oh, I worked at a movie theater when that movie was out. Oh, God.
We can all get Mariah carried away with that one.
I don't think anybody.
You've been waiting for that one forever, haven't you, Charlie?
Months, my friend. Ah, months. So thank you for listening, everybody. Stay tuned for the projection booth with Mike White. For Alex Jowski, Kevin Daly, Josh Hadley, and Cecil Trachtenberg, my name is Charlie McMullen. Good night, everyone.